We still do 7 NUFC Matters show a week for free. But if you want to help support NUFC Matters, then there are a few ways of doing it. Hit the like button on each live broadcast and video. This helps the channel grow. Hit the subscribe button and select the all notifications bell so you don't miss a single show. If you want to help us financially, then you can join the channel using this button with the membership starting at $1.99 a month. Or you can drop us a donation in the chat using a super sticker. We're also looking for sponsors. If you'd like your brand advertised on the flyers for the show and featured during the ad break, then email John at nufcmatters.com to arrange today. Good evening, welcome to NUFC Matters with me, Steve Wraith. Big welcome to Malcolm and to Gibbo. How are you, lads?
All right, Steve. Thanks. How are you, John?
Absolutely good. Despite the result, the last result, absolutely okay by now.
Yep, and that's where we're starting tonight. As always, get your questions in. I can see a few questions already filtering in. You've got an hour of this wonderful show to get a few questions into the two legends. And we will start with Malcolm. And a look back to a disappointing trip to Stamford Bridge. 5 goals we had. It wasn't a thriller. Newcastle losing by 3-2. Disappointing, I think, because I think we all felt that this was a rare trip to Stamford Bridge. Newcastle felt they could have got something, Malcolm.
Yeah. Absolutely. And I think we all had every right to believe that we would come back with something. What I really don't understand is how last season we were so successful reaching the Champions League, etc. And the way in which we played was that the back four pushed right up. It was a real squeeze job on the opposition. It got opposing forwards a long, long way away from goal. So why is it that this season and against Chelsea, it was more blatant than it has been of late? Why are we actually just dropping onto the toes of the goalkeeper? Either there is a complete lack of confidence in themselves, in the defence, in the goalkeeper. When a side drops off, it means that there are things wrong, and particularly a lack of confidence. Lack of confidence in who, though? I just thought we were begging Chelsea to go and score against us. And yet we've gone there. We've scored two goals ourselves. And you think, come on, yeah, that should be enough for Chelsea to come away with at least a draw, if not a win. But I thought we were shocking at the back. And we weren't. I didn't feel that the midfield had too good a game. Although the lad who's come back from injury, bless him, I thought he was terrific on the night. But he wasn't well supported at all. I just came away scratching my head over the performance, thinking, how do you make sense of all of that? And I'm here we are some days later, and I still can't make full sense of it. What about you, John? Can you make sense of it?
Well, I just thought, I was so disappointed because I just thought we're back to bad habits. Habits of this season, not last season when we were excellent. We're back to bad habits. And what I didn't understand with Eddie is that when we played Wolves, we employed a low press, brought them onto us and countered, which was totally different to the way we normally play and were played when we were very successful last season, but countered because with the great speed we had up front with Gordon, Almiron and Isaac. So that worked 3-0. We go down there in for an away game. That style suits an away game better than a home game. For an away game, all of a sudden, we didn't. We was open as a barn door, swinging on its hinges. We abandoned all that. The clean sheet that was so welcomed against Wolves lasted 5 minutes at Stamford Bridge. We were one down in 5 minutes, and then we let in three. And, you know, with hindsight, I didn't say it at the time, and neither did any of the press lads or whatever. But when you look at the clean sheet against Wolves was a huge rarity. It was something that happened all last season, but it's a huge rarity this season. And you just think, with hindsight, did we get a clean sheet against Wolves? Because both their top scorers didn't even start. They were out injured. And Neto, their best forward, the most creative forward, was strangely off it and was substituted injured at half-time. So that led itself to a clean sheet. We didn't look like a clean sheet team when we played down at Stamford Bridge. And, you know, that much-vaunted back four of last season, which was Trippier, Shaw, Botman and Byrne. Trippier didn't play. But all of them have been poor this season as a unit. As a unit, they've been poor. Shaw's had a good season individually with his creativity, his passing from his own penalty area. Botman's shot. Botman is absolutely shot. He's come back from his injury, obviously, far too quickly. He should have perhaps had a knee operation. It is bothering him, and his confidence is gone completely. He's a shadow of the bloke we know.
And thus, John, it's making other players so unsure.
Yeah, but Byrne, for goodness sake. I mean, are we ever going to learn? They're queuing up on that side. I thought they were selling hot pies. There was a queue twice around the stadium to play on the right hand, to play on Chelsea's right hand side. I mean, every game we play in the outside right looks sensational. I mean, it's happened against Luton. It's happened against Bournemouth. Cole Palmer got himself in the England team playing against Burton down at Stamford Bridge. He massacred him. He was the one class act on the pitch, Palmer. And he absolutely destroyed Byrne, who, in fairness to him, he needs protection. I mean, he's so limited when out wide, he needs protection. And that's provided by the fella in front of him. Unfortunately, Gordon, who is willing to track back as well as go forward normally, was strangely off with an injury and was, I think he must have been carrying that almost in the back. He never tracked back once. He let Palmer go the whole game at Burn. And of course, he killed him. He absolutely killed him. I mean, I look at that team, and if Steve says to me later on, what team would you pick to go to Manchester United? I know all the players that deserve dropping, but I don't know who deserves playing. The one man who's whose reputation was okay down there, Lefermento, for me, was star man. He went into a back four. The other three were awful. I thought Tino did well. And so I give him a plus. And I thought Murphy did well when he come on for Gordon.
Yes, he did.
And he got a good goal and he put some crosses in. I thought he did well. But you look at the rest of it. I mean, the midfield. I mean, Longstaff shot. Botman shot. Burns shot. I mean, they're shot. They're honestly, they are dying to get out of the side. I don't mean mentally. I mean, they need it to get out of this side and get a rest. It's whether we've got people to bring in. And it's whether we'll do something. I would like Eddie to do something to make Pep think and to make our players think. Go to five at the back. Change some personnel. I mean, if we're sitting here and we're going to Ladbrokes, Steve, with 100 quid to put on in bets, you would bet that he'll play the same back four as Chelsea, because Livramento has to, but he'll play Shaw, he'll play Shaw, Botman and Byrne. He'll play the same three midfield. I mean, please change it. I mean, yeah, you know, you've got Lascelles.
Are we not, John? Are we not on this? Are we not starting to see a weakness in the manager? He won't change the team. He doesn't
or the tactics.
And he doesn't change the tactics. Yeah, exactly. And they've got plan A and no plan B.
Oh, I think that part is very, very right. I don't want
to have any during the game.
Since Eddie come, the first season he did magnificent to keep us up. The second season we got top four. But we can't just go on being grateful. And it's not meaning you're anti Newcastle to get worried about something. It actually means you're pro Newcastle. And it doesn't mean you're anti Eddie Howe, because you're not having a go. You're saying, please, Eddie, sometimes even the greatest make mistakes. I mean, I remember going to Bob Paisley and spending 5 days with him in Liverpool when they were winning the European Cup every year and saying, what's your secret? And he says, I'll tell you the secret, Gibbo. There isn't a secret. But what good managers do, they don't try to justify their mistakes to get rid, to change things. And he said, The good manager is not the manager that makes no mistakes. It's a manager that makes the least mistakes. And I think that's a very fair situation. And I'm just looking. I'm going down there. And I need a lift to Man City, and I want to make Pep think about things, and I want to make the Manchester City players think about things. Now, if we go 4-3-3 with the same back four and the same middle three, forget the front, because at least we're scoring some goals. If we play the same back four and keeper, and we play the same middle three, and we play 4-3-3, he hasn't got a thing to think about. Pep knows what's going to happen now, and so do every one of the Manchester City players. Is it worth playing Lascelles? Is it worth going five at the back? Is it worth playing Byrne as a left-sided centre-half? Is it worth bringing Miley in or gambling that Anderson's fit enough to start? It's just doing something different, because we're predictable. We're not only predictable to the opposition, we're predictable to ourselves, and we're not making players think. If I'm Botman or I'm Longstaff, I'm wondering why I'm playing every week with me form, but I know I'm going to be playing every week because I'm never dropped.
Lots of interesting comments coming in, lots of questions coming in. There was one about Eddie Howe, which I will take, because lots of people have been discussing it in the chat this week. Do Super Mac or Gibbo think we will part ways with Howe at the end of the season? I hope not, but the rumours are in full circulation. And Trolls is one who wants to see the back of Howe at the end of the season. So we're hearing lots of people saying that. But I mean, for me, you know, I think Eddie Howe, first of all, has got credit in the bank for what he's done in the first 18 months of his managerial career at Newcastle. And I also think that no matter which manager came in, if he was to leave, whether it be under his own steam or whether he'd be ceremoniously dumped, I think that most people would struggle, because Newcastle will still be in the same position with regards to FFP. So if you give a Conte the job at a football club, Newcastle or otherwise, he wants $200 million to spend in every window. He's not going to get that at Newcastle. So, Eddie Howe, what's your thoughts, Malcolm? I think he's got enough credit in the bank to see this, to see the season out and start next season.
Well, yes, I would agree on that comment that he has that yes, he's certainly got credibility here at Newcastle, and plus the fact that he can be considered a young manager with lots in front of him. And I keep hearing about Mourinho. For heaven's sake, Mourinho's old news. He's not gonna come to somewhere like Newcastle when we are so tied by FFP. And we are seriously tied, because we've got to come up with the money for Lewis, for heaven's sake. And the whole of me, and pay Chelsea off, and for and that depletes what we would dearly like to do, and that is bring a few more players in. Can't do it. So I find this FFP so restrictive on people who that it's not saving, it's not helping.
I take all that. I don't think for one moment that I was going to go in the summer. I just don't think that'll happen, and I don't think certainly the English contingent of the board, i.e. Amanda Staveley, Jamie Rubin, and Amanda's husband, they that are based over here, they, in running the club, I mean, of course, Amanda's a board, etc. But they will not get rid, they will not push the Saudis to get rid of Howe. We don't know how trigger happy Saudis are, because they never talk to anybody. And I'm not meaning they should, they just don't. They've got the figureheads in Amanda and his Jamie. They don't do it. So we don't know for certain what they think. But I would be staggered. I don't think there's any chance of that happening. But what I've got to say is, and by the way, Mourinho's got no chance. I mean, he is yesterday's man, big time. By the way, he would walk here, but he won't get the chance to walk here. Well, he can keep walking, and he'll end up with Belt Rangers. But he's got no chance. So we can forget about him straight away. But while it's true what Mal says and what Steve's saying, there's restrictions and new managers and the financial fair play and all that, but let's get it right. Within the restrictions of what Newcastle's got, we should be able to make a decent fist of it. I'm not talking about, you know, being in the top four every year, but if we get our tactics right, if we get our organisation right, if we buy within the restrictions the right players, and it works for us, we can make a half-decent fist of it. And we made a magnificent fist of it last season. We made a half-decent fist of it the first half of this season, when we were beating Paris Saint-Germain and a couple of others were making a decent fist of it. 2024, we've made no fist of it at all. We can do better than this. And this is where he's got to earn his coin. He's going to stay. He has money in the bank, as Steve says, etc., etc. But we can't hide behind that forever. It is now up to him to organise tactics, to organise team selection, to put more confidence in players, to shake up players at the same time by not picking them automatically when they're dreadful week after week after week after week, like Botman and Longstaff. And by the way, I'm not having a go at those two lads, because they, for me, come back far too quickly from injury. And that's one of their problems. They were never fit. I'm not certain that Botman doesn't need an operation on his knee. And Longstaff was rushed back because we didn't have numbers. And they've been a pale imitation of what they really are, because they've come back, in my opinion, very, very quickly, because they had to, because we had nobody around. But we cannot hide behind financial fair play and injuries for the rest of time. And that's what we're doing at the moment. It is correct. That is a good reason for not being in the top four, but it's not a good reason for being 10th.
No, I absolutely, John. I certainly agree. Albeit, when you look at the kind of injuries that we've had, one of the questions that has to be asked is, why are we getting so many long-term injuries? There's hardly a player missing for just a couple of games, and then coming back having had his treatment and what have you, and away he goes. No, they're out for 2 months, 3 months, 4 months, 5 months, for heaven's sake.
And of course, Harvey Barnes, having come back, is out again now.
And he's out again. I know. It's absolutely crazy. And of course, of course, it's going to affect everything when you're missing so many players. But I really don't understand why they're all such long-term injuries. And it begs the question, is there something wrong in training? Is there something that they're not organising in terms of getting the players stretched out, although players should always stretch themselves out? They shouldn't need to be told what to do and how to do it. A lot of questions to be asked, I think. There was a question that came up about the physiotherapy, was there a head physio since Derek Wright retired? But I think there is, isn't there? As far as I'm aware.
Yeah.
And they've got a number of physios. Good heavens above! Most clubs used to run on with just one or maybe two physios. But
those days have well changed. There's more medical staff and data staff than our players these days, yes. It seems.
Yeah, absolutely there is, John. You know, and I always remember a few years ago when Mark Hughes was the manager of Man City, and the Man City, two buses rolled up. And one was for the team and kit, and the other was a 52-seater for all of the support staff. And I'd never seen anything like it ever before. You know, we used to have loads of room still with everybody on the one bus.
Yeah. There was times I think you could have got on a motorbike and put somebody in the sidecar, and would have been the whole team.
Pretty much so, yeah.
Interesting stuff. We will wait and see what happens. Knowing Newcastle, they will pull off a couple more surprise results before the end of the season, and things may change again. But lots of comments coming in. George says, at worst, we should be seventh because we are richer than non-Big Six clubs. We should demand success and be in a soft touch. Too many poor teams. I mean, lots of opinions coming in. You know, everyone's got one. Yeah, Newcastle fans will be biting their nails watching Gordon play for England. Hopefully no aggravation of his injury. Yeah, congratulations.
Yeah, yeah. Congratulations on him being selected. I hope he's going to be fit for it.
Well, the answer to that, Malcolm, is yes, because I know that Southgate has talked Eddie Howe about his fitness before he announced his squad.
Yeah.
So he would not dare to put him in the squad if Eddie had said, to be truthful, he's not going to be any good to you. Whether he'll get on there's a big difference between being the 25-man squad and playing. Whether he'll get on the pitch at some time as a sub in these games, I would sincerely hope so, because the lad thoroughly deserves it. He is absolutely dedicated to Newcastle United. He's absolutely dedicated to England after his performances when we won the under-21s Euros. I mean, it was a wonderful interview he did with my mate Craig Hope recently, where he actually said that he's refused to book a holiday. This was before he was picked today by England. He refused to book a holiday with his missus to go away in the summer because he's still hoping he gets the Euros this summer. So he hasn't booked his summer holiday. So good luck to him. By far, for me, with the possible exception of Shaw, but even including him, at this stage of the season, I make Anthony Gordon our player of the season.
And he's mine.
Yeah, I think it's a wonderful thing that he got in today, because he deserves that in encouragement. Yes. He finished off his under-21 career in the best way possible. He played a false nine during the summer. He was brilliant. We won a tournament. He kept in fitness. He come back to us. He was a shadow last season because he wasn't up to what was needed tempo-wise at Newcastle. He's been an absolute revelation this season. So good on him. Thoroughly deserved. I'm delighted for him.
Mm-hmm. Yes, Bluer than Boy says, there's two games, so it'll be close, two different 11s from Gareth. Gordon should play at some point. Yeah, I would imagine he will.
Yeah.
With our injuries, I'd like Gordon to stay in Newcastle. It's not going to happen, Trulls. He's already done his interview at Newcastle today and said he's thoroughly looking forward to it. So, we will wait and see. We are halfway through the show. Time for the ads. A big thanks to all our sponsors, Skips and Bins. Go to their website, skipsandbins.com. Email inquiries at skipsandbins.com or telephone 0800 25 45 25 3. Easy contract free and pay-as-you-go waste collection. Thanks to Mr. Vicky's Sauces, handmade in Cumbria. Go to their website, mrvickys.co.uk. Email info at mrvickys.co.uk or telephone 01768 210 102. Thanks to United Group Travel. Go to their website, unitedgrouptravel.com. Email info at unitedgrouptravel.com or phone 01670 632 460 or mobile 0791 666 4174. They're a local company from Morpeth and there are no strangers on our tours, just friends you haven't met yet. Big thanks to Media Arts for all the help with the video side of things. And if you want to subscribe to the channel, hit the subscribe button under the video. Click the thumb up to like the video and click share to share to your social media. If you want to help the channel financially, you can pay a one-off £25 fee. You get a cup, a scarf, a pen and a membership card and entry into the NUFC Matters monthly draw. Email John at nufcmatters.com for more details. Or if you've got a smartphone, scan the QR code now and it takes you straight to the membership pack. We also support the food bank on this channel. Go to nufcfansfoodbank.co.uk and you'll find the match day bucket. You can make a donation virtually today. You can also find us on iTunes, Spotify and other podcast providers. We also do events during the year. NUFC Matters Live will be at the O2 City Hall on Friday the 2nd of August for an evening with Rob Lee, One Night in Antwerp. Tickets start at £15 and you can get them from Ticketmaster.co.uk. An evening with the entertainers takes place on Friday the 24th of January 2025 at the Tyne Theatre and Opera House in Newcastle. Telephone 0844 249 1000 or visit the website tynetheatreandoperahouse.uk to buy tickets today. You can also catch me on the North East Footy Breakfast Show live on Toon Radio weekdays 7 till 9 a.m. on DAB, smart speakers and the toonuk.com. And tickets on sale, don't forget, for the end of season party, which is in, we're raising money for Dementia Matters. Tenner a ticket, Super Matt and Gibbo will be on, the Long Sands acoustic set as well. Tickets from nufcmatters.com and tickets from newcastlelegends.com. Okay, well, let's get into the questions before we look ahead to the game at the weekend. And let's randomly pick one. Alan, yes, question for Malcolm. What was the goal that was classed as his best ever, which there is no TV coverage? Was it against Leicester City, Mal?
Oh, I know the one. Yes, it was. Yes, it was against Leicester City. What people might not be aware of is that there was this strange ruling on television that they had to treat all clubs totally equally. So Tyne Tees, if what they had to do was literally treat Darlington, Hartlepool, Sunderland, Middlesbrough and Newcastle and York all equally the same. And so they would go to one game, one weekend, the next weekend it was to another. And so York, Hartlepool and Darlington would appear as many times on Tyne Tees television as did Sunderland, Middlesbrough and Newcastle. It was quite ridiculous, but that was the very strict ruling of the time. Whereas now it's so completely different. And there was this huge fear in the game that there was a huge fear that the more television there was, the less people would go. Well, I think the modern day is proving that so wrong, because crowds are at maximum, and the television can't get enough.
Anyway. There wasn't a match of the day, Malcolm. There wasn't a match of the day situation where the cameras were at every top flight game. There wasn't either. So there was no cameras at our game with Leicester, was it?
No. So against Leicester, there were no cameras at all. And it was only, I think, one in six games of ours that was televised, John. The Leicester game wasn't, no cameras at all.
No.
Not for news or anything. It just wasn't allowed. Quite bizarre. Anyway, to describe the goal, Leicester had a corner and I think it was Paddy Howard headed it out. And it dropped down sort of inside right, just inside the box, to the feet of Irvin Natris. And he started running. Now, I've been back marking somebody on the between the sticks in the goal. And so I set off. And so Irvin Natris was going through the inside right lane. And I was going straight through the middle. And we caught the whole of Leicester completely by surprise. And it was just one person defending all of a sudden as we were approaching the Leicester half. If memory serves me, it was the midfielder, John Samuels. And so he was sort of edging towards the line that Irvin Natris was running, and backing off still a bit, but he had his eye on me coming through the middle, and I was some 12 yards behind Irvin Natris, and Irvin was quick, and so it was a real breakaway, but the one thing I knew was that as soon as Irvin crossed the halfway line, he would get rid of the ball. I swear that he thought that the opposing halfway line was full of crocodiles. I really, he hated going in there. He was happier in Newcastle's half. So he went about 10 yards into the half. John Samuels hadn't really closed him down at all. And he just knocked the ball square. And I was coming like a steam train through the very middle of the pitch. And I and the ball met absolutely perfectly. I didn't have to adjust my run in any way whatsoever. It was the whole timing of it was perfect. And it was just there to be hit, and it was about 40 yards from goal. I was just inside of the centre circle, and so I smacked it, and it went like a rocket. I always remember about a year later seeing it was on a Saturday morning, and the South African golfer Gary Platt, he was doing a golf lesson, and what he had done was he had gone through the whole range of clubs during the programs that he had done, and on this one it was the last program, and he said, right, now I come to the most difficult of all clubs to use, and that's the driver. And he took his driver out of the bag, took the cover off it, and he looked at it, and then at the camera, and he said, with this big hitter, he said, I must have hit 10,000 shots. He said, and do you know, he said, there was only one of them that was perfect. And I thought, I understand exactly what you're saying, because that was the one perfect strike absolutely perfect that I struck against Leicester. You know, all the others you could find a little bit of a fault with. But with Leicester, it was absolutely clean, and it was and for 40 yards it just kept rising, and it hit the back of the net only about 5 foot high, and it had been going sort of steadily up all the way over 40 yards. I'm trying to think of the goalkeeper. It wasn't
Wallington. Wallington, was it?
Yeah, Mark Wallington. That's Mark, right. Wallington, thank yeah. you. Yeah, and he got nowhere near it at all. So yes, it was a shame because it was quite a spectacular goal.
What I do remember, sorry, Joe. 200,000 people saw it, Malcolm, according to when you talked to people. Yeah, the crowd must have been 200,000.
Everybody was there that day. But it was quite a day, and it was one hell of a goal. But the thing was that when I actually struck it, it was in the action of coming, of meeting the ball and then just striking it and not taking it on in a run to continue towards goal. There was that, oh, bloody hell, what's he think he's doing? Oh, goal, and everything's going mad. But they were complaining to start with, and all of a sudden we're cheering. So,
I'm looking forward to Isaac doing that at the Etihad on Saturday. That'll do.
Yeah, we've got a question. We've got a question for you, John.
Yeah.
Do you think anybody's got the stupidity to hit a shot now from 40 yards?
Alan Little says, a question for Gibbo. What are his memories of the Newcastle Diamonds Speedway team at Brough Park? I went mid to late 70s. I saw the Owen brothers. I saw a kid called Kenny Carter. I missed the legends Mauga, Olsen and Michenek. Also, I believe the crowds at Brough Park were massive back then. Do you think it'll ever return to Newcastle, Gibbo?
Well, I tell you what, I never expected a question on Speedway tonight. No. I must say, that has completely thrown me. But yeah, I mean, I used to deal a lot with the boys down there and do a lot of interviews. And, you know, there's a great sadness that those days have gone, because at the height, Newcastle Diamonds were one heck of a team. And they had the times I remember was Ivan Major, because he was a world champion, possibly one of the greatest speedway riders has ever been, and he rode for us in Newcastle. Was sensational. The Owens were good, of course they were good. But Major, I mean, I wasn't a petrolhead. I know very little about motor cars or bikes. I mean, I changed my motor car when the cigarette holder was full. When last year it was full, I changed my car because I knew nothing about it apart from that. So that was my attitude towards vehicles. But Ivan Major, I did it two or three. Despite not being a petrolhead, I was able, because you're professional, to do two or three talkings with Ivan Major, and it was absolutely fascinating because he was the world's best. And he was world champion while he was at Newcastle. Imagine that. Terrific days. Speedway now, Poland's its heartland, etc. In this country, it's not what it was. Will it come back to Newcastle? There's nothing to indicate it will, but lots of happy, happy memories. And in those days, we had the big hitters. Ivan Major, the Owens, we had the big hitters. And that was great, because that's what this town's about sports-wise, isn't it? It's about having the great hitters, whether it's football, whether it's rugby, when the Falcons won the championship under John Hall and went to Twickenham regularly, whether it was Brendan Foster and Mike McLeod with the Athletics, were about the big stars.
Yeah, unfortunately now when you go to the shops, you get surrounded by people riding around on motorbikes on the path, so you get your own version of Speedway modern day. Alan Thompson says, question Malcolm and John, Do you think the PSR will force Newcastle to build a new stadium, whether we like it or not, just for revenue alone, to compete at the top level? Thoughts, Malcolm? Do you think we're heading towards a new stadium regardless?
No, I don't. No, I really don't. Why would it be demanded, as he's suggesting there? I don't understand that.
I think because the situation we find ourselves in, without taking up too much time, lads, is that we obviously are struggling with the FFP rules. We know that, which is limiting our spend. We all know that. And one way of increasing the spend would be to increase corporate areas within the ground, which the club at the moment are doing. And unfortunately, what's happening is ordinary fans, working class fans, you know, middle class fans to an extreme now, are being priced out of the ground because people can't afford £1,000 for a season ticket, Mal. We've been used to paying between £350 and £500. Now a lot of areas are being asked to pay £1,000 plus for a season ticket. And that's only going to happen more and more. I've already been told unofficially that another area will be changed next season. And those people who are currently in that area will either have to pay the price or they'll, you know, you can't afford to go to the game anymore. It's as simple as that. Sure. Now, that's where we're at, Mal. So I think a lot of people feel that potentially what will happen is the club will turn around and say, okay, we'll get it. And there clearly is a demand for more tickets. So what we'll do is we'll build a new stadium, which it's almost pushing you towards a new stadium. That's what the question means.
Right. Well, firstly, I think that there is scope to extend and expand St James Park. And I'm pretty sure that they'll be looking very carefully and working hard at coming up with all the best ideas on that. And I think that there's a pretty much a changed attitude in council planning offices these days with regards to planning permission. But also, when you're looking at the income situation, that the vast majority of income it comes in through advertising, sponsorship, and so on and so forth. What you've got to remember is that Mike Ashley really did a stitch up on the club. He did an absolute stitch up just before he left, and left it pretty much for 2 to 3 years without a great deal of income coming in. And that has seriously and sadly affected the Newcastle's workings in the transfer market. Seriously affected it, that there's been just a fraction at the disposal of the club that there should have been. And so all of that is going to be changing over the next few months. So all in all, I really don't think that there's any need for alarm. But it will come. It will gradually get there, but it's not going to be it all in a bum's rush.
I mean, the whole situation, and it is frightening for the average supporter, which I include me in my upbringing when I was a supporter, in the level, not a rich man, a working class man when brought up in, and middle class, no more, is affordability. And the new Newcastle owners will exploit the situation within St. James's Park to make as much money as they can to fight against Manchester United and Liverpool and Manchester City. And the worrying thing is that sections of the ground will, season tickets will go through the roof and really, really hurt, because they've got to make money within the commercial side. And the only way of doing that within the ground is to make certain parts of the ground rooms where you pay three times as much as the ordinary fan and have hospitality and that places the rank and file working class man out of supporting his own club, unless the stadium suddenly becomes much, much bigger than the 52,000. It would break my heart romantically to leave St. James's Park, and I still cling to the hope that we will be able to build upwards and move slightly outwards as well with help on the limitations that are around the ground with the buildings that are around the ground. But if we have to go down the route, and it will be looked from Saudi if want to show the greatest respect to Newcastle United supporters, but it'll be looked by the Saudi people as a business proposition, and how do we exploit the space we've got to the maximum we can. And if the club is successful, like it was last season, and like we hope it's going to continue to be, they look to increase our revenue, which means that seats that go to the ordinary working class man, if the rich guys will pay three times as much and have a room and have a meal at the same time, then that's the way it'll go. But if we, I'm in the Alan Shearer camp. If we've got to have a new stadium, if, and I still cling to St. James's Park because of 130 years, but it's easy for me to do that. That's the romantic in me. But I'm not paying the prices or getting them increased that the Newcastle United supporters are, in facing the fear that the only way they'll be able to watch is if they pay in four figures. If it's going to have to move to get a 70, 80,000 stadium, it's got to be as close to St. James's Park as possible. It's got to be within the shadow of St. James's Park, if you like, and not be stuck out somewhere beyond the town wall, to try to keep this cathedral on the hill situation in the centre of town and not go out into the sticks somewhere. It is a very emotive situation. It'll unveil as time goes on, but I thoroughly, thoroughly, thoroughly understand the worry. As a working class lad that was brought up on the terraces, as a Ben and with my family, I couldn't have afforded to watch Newcastle United in the situation I was in. If it was today, with the threat that everything's going to be turned into a lounge and everything is going to have an extra note on the price, because it's going to be a lounge and they're going to give you a pie or something to justify that seat, et cetera, et cetera. And you can end up pricing out the genuine supporter.
Sure. That's not the basic supporter.
And then end up with a load. We have criticised Manchester United for the prawn sandwich brigade. We don't want to end up as the prawn sandwich brigade.
Problem is that the income that comes in from those kind of seats, look at Spurs, Yano mentions this, we've seen it in the press. Spurs used to make £1 million revenue per game, now they make £6 million revenue per game. Plus they have lots of other revenue streams through NFL concerts, etc. And that's the attraction. That is the attraction. And the, you know, there are seats where you can pay anything up to £6,000 a game to sit on the bench behind the players. I mean, that exists at Chelsea. Trolls mentions that £5,000 to sit behind overpaid players. And Jay makes the point, Malcolm, PIF will never spend £1 billion for an extra 18,000 seats. It makes no economic sense as an investment fund, as it would take 20 years to break even. So a new stadium, it looks as if that's where we'll head to with this feasibility study.
But at Spurs and at Arsenal, people are paying thousands a season to go and watch their team. You know, you've just said that people are unhappy of paying £1,000 a season.
Yeah.
Steve, when it used to be 300 or 400.
Yeah.
But we've got to realise that in the South, that they get far, far greater amounts of money from their crowds than ever you will do up here. And it doesn't matter what you do up here. It's a different ball. Different ball game. It's a completely different financial climate here in the North to the South. And And so Newcastle, the club, is not helped by that. It's always going to mean that they'll be lagging behind in some way. It doesn't matter how rich the owners are.
I mean, bizarrely,
get the revenue through the gates.
Bizarrely, the club had a meeting last night. I mean, you know, fair play. They're inviting fans up to have a chat, etc. You know, people are selected via ballot. You can put yourselves in for it. But how to create a better atmosphere at the ground? Well, I'll tell you how you create a better atmosphere at the ground. It's what happens on the pitch. It's organic. You can't manufacture. You can't manufacture it. But make no doubt about it, the increase in corporate at a ground will affect the atmosphere as well, you know, because the corporate don't go to watch the football. They go to entertain their corporate guests to try and get that deal over the line on a Monday. And half of them have had a drink and aren't bothered about the match.
Well, yeah, I mean, the big worry, Steve, is that this has always been a working man's club. And that's its heartland. That's the people that passionately care. And it's the people that we want to make certain aren't squeezed out of St. James's Park, our future ground. But, you know, if people are willing to pay the money, then if you're sitting in Saudi and you think you can turn seats where you get 600 into seats where you get over a grand, and you don't buy into what the club was and what the rank and file supporter is, and you'll go down that route. And if Newcastle are successful, we'll get away with it, because some of the fans will be corporate fans that come from outside the area, but they want to come to support a big club, and they'll do it because of their corporate guests. And as you say, they won't care monkeys about the game, really. They'll care about the occasion. And by the way, if it therefore goes pear-shaped, Where's the guys that supported you all the time? You've got to be careful that you don't squeeze out the heartland of the club, the people that care about the club. It is a very difficult balancing act, and it's one that fills you full of trepidation. But then
great news for Gateshead, great news for Dunstan, great news for North Shields, teams that need support, is that those people who do get pushed away from St James's Park will probably turn to non-league, lads.
I doubt it. Not that much. I don't think it really makes much of a difference, Steve. I really don't. Not, you know, if Gateshead are successful, and they're doing very well at the moment.
Yeah.
But is it making that much of a difference to their gates?
I tell you what, Steve, you depressed me about the Newcastle United ground. You haven't even asked me about Manchester City yet, so I'm going to cut your throat at the end of the podcast.
I was settling. I was leading up to it. You see, I'm gently bedding you in, lads.
I was going to say I'm going to cut your throat now.
I mean, I just want to ask one more question before we go to that. So we'll probably just get a Q&A for that. But we've got an interesting one. We tend to pick different questions. Borough fan, thanks for watching, mate. He says, can I ask the lads, do they think the new stud design is causing knee and ankle issues as they don't have any give once they are planted in the pitch? I've said this for a long time now, Mal. A lot of new injuries seem to have been developed. If you remember when the metatarsal came in, when David Beckham broke his foot, and we'd never heard of a metatarsal injury. But no surprise that we now don't have as much protection on boots, and it was an injury on the top of the foot, you know? So do you think possibly this could be a reason, Malcolm?
Now, people have to understand just what the players play on these days, and what there is laying on the very surface of the pitch is a very fine nylon mesh that covers the whole pitch, and the grass grows up through the holes in the mesh, and so what that means is that mesh is what the studs are making contact with, not the soft soil, and so they've had to completely change the boots, and rather than wear screw-in studs, they have to use molded rubber, and it'll be small studs, possibly even like pimple studs, And the grip reduces. If you watch, Dan Byrne has a problem keeping on his feet because he's forever slipping over, falling over. And I think it's because he's so tall that he's not got the grip that he requires under his boots. So he's more top heavy than he normally would be. And over he goes. So there are different injuries, yes. I think purely and simply it's because the pitch surface is totally different to what it used to be. They don't play on soil any longer. They play on a plastic mesh covering.
Okay, there you go. Good answer. Good question, that. So thanks for that. I've got one more for you, Malcolm, and I don't like to miss out when someone asks a personal question. Question for Super Mac. You did such a good job as Luton manager, he says.
You were Fulham manager.
How come you didn't ever take another job, and did Newcastle ever offer you a coaching or managerial role? It's an easy mistake to make. You played for Luton, you managed.
I was 5 years manager at Fulham, and we did well. We did well. It was enjoyable. When I left Fulham, and this was after a massive argument with the chairman, I think it was Bill McGarry who left Newcastle, and they were looking for a manager. And from what I understand, although I never spoke to anybody directly within Newcastle, the club, that they were considering Laurie McMenemy and they were considering me, and there was a sort of hung board on it. And so the chairman, Stan Seymour Jr., he threw another name into it, and it was Jack Charlton. And he got the job. I don't know your recall on it, John. But this was told to me. I don't know how true it is. I don't know the veracity.
I don't know the ins and outs of it, Malcolm, but I do know that at certain stages within Newcastle, your name was obviously touted because of the success you were having at Fulham. Mm-hmm. And Laurie McMenemy's name was touted when he was having the success at Southampton. And, of course, both with huge links up here. He was an ex-player, and Laurie is a Newcastle fan who was born in Gateshead. And so both were in the running at various times. I know that when Jack Charlton's name was put forward by Stan Seymour, it had some support. As forgetting about the other people, it had some support from Jackie Milburn because it was family. It was Jack was part of the family, and Jack was a Newcastle United fan. Bobby never was, but Jack was. But I think Jack was a magnificent manager for the underdog, but not a magnificent manager for the top dog. For example, his huge successes were at places like Middlesbrough and Sheffield Wednesday clubs, but not Newcastle United. The Republic of Ireland, sensational, but not England. Mm. If he would take a smaller club or a smaller country and devise tactics, ball quickly from back to front, attack, get the second ball off a big centre-forward, score, he would have tactics that would work brilliantly for a club. But that club didn't have to be Manchester United or Newcastle or Liverpool. It wouldn't have worked at that level. He was brilliant for the Republic of Ireland at international level because he overcome their limitations. But if he wouldn't have worked for England or Brazil or Italy, or it was all different circumstances. I had a lot of time for Jack as a bloke, loved him to death. I thought he was
wrong. Yeah, wrong. He was great company, wasn't he?
Yeah, but wrong manager for Newcastle.
Yeah.
Okay. We are at the end of the programme. Newcastle do play in the FA Cup this weekend. It's a 5:30 kickoff live to the nation. Malcolm, even me, the eternal optimist, is going to say that it's going to take penalties for Newcastle to get into the next round. So Newcastle, so it's a penalty shootout for me, lads. That is my get-out clause this week. And Newcastle will get through and draw Liverpool. So, Malcolm.
were you that fella getting off the plane on Fantasy Island, the little guy in the white suit? Did you play that part? I didn't realise it was you.
It's a plane.
Oh, dear. No, I think that this one's way beyond us. And Manchester City will be... it'll be nice to see us score against them, but I'm even doubting that at the moment, the way we are. And so I think the FA Cup's got it can be written off this weekend, and let's just concentrate on getting into Europe. So I think it could be a bit of a walloping in store this weekend.
It's a walloping from Malcolm. John, what you got under your hat this week?
God, crikey. The only thing we can say, the best we can say, is that this is the fourth meeting between Newcastle and Manchester City this season, and all three previous games have been close score-wise, which means we've always remained in the game. We beat them in the League Cup up here 1-0. Yep. The only reason they can't complete a quadruple this season is because of Newcastle United. The only reason they can't win all four trophies they've entered in is because of Newcastle United. They've knocked them out the League Cup. They're going for a double treble, which is quite staggering. But the only reason we beat them 1-0 in the League Cup. In the Premier League, we lost 3-2 up here, when De Bruyne turned the game, and we lost only 1-0 down there. The performance wasn't good, but we lost only 1-0. And those three results mean that in all three games, we were never totally out of the game. We were always in with a chance. And that is the only thing we can hang on to, because the way we've played in 2024, significant results apart, like winning at Aston Villa, and beating Wolves, who's both are strikers, their top scorer as well, doesn't advocate anything. The way we leak goals is frightening. The chance we had, I felt, was taking them to a replay by drawing in 90 minutes, getting them up here, and it could be very different. We haven't even been given that opportunity because we're going to extra time and penalties. And that's dreadfully against us. I mean, if we want to be scared, if you want to sit the kids down and tell them a ghost story to terrify them, you've just got to say FA Cup holders, Premier League holders, European champions, World Club champions, plus on a 21-match unbeaten run. Now, if that doesn't terrify you, where you want to go and lie down in a darkened room because you've got migraine, I don't know what will. But they actually happen to be facts. Without saying that we played badly against Chelsea and we've been leaking goals like a colander, and, you know, we join hands to find the living. So, I'm not walking into this thinking that, you know, it's going to be lovely to be at Wembley in a semi-final, and at long last this aged hack is going to see Newcastle United win something again. I'm not going down that route. And this sounds awful and defeatist, but anybody that listens to this show knows how much the three of us care about Newcastle United. I'm just hoping that whatever the result is, and I think we will not be in the semi-finals, that we go out with dignity, that we go out with a performance, we go out where we can hold our heads high, we go out when we are not embarrassed. That is important.
So have you got a prediction, John?
I will lose.
Yeah,
for God's sake. I mean, I don't want, it doesn't matter if it's 3-2 or 12-0. You're out the cup and your goal difference isn't affected because it's not the league. Nope. All that matters is what the result is, and the result is we lose.
So when we tune in next Thursday, lads, we'll know you both predicted a defeat and I predicted a win on penalties. We will wait and see.
You're a little fibber, Phil Collins.
Have a good week, lads. Enjoy the weekend. Take care.
Yeah, enjoy your football.
Take care, lads.